also contributed hot exhaust that choked the chamber with a hot, dense fog. "Ma'am," the weapons officer said a beat later, speaking loudly into our earpieces over the roar of the boosters. At least the deafening chatter of the PDS guns had cut off. "All targets eliminated, including the communications hub. Nothing is shooting at us, and I have nothing left to shoot at. Open the front door, please." She zoomed in the display and pointed at the heavy armored maintenance access door that led to the Archive AI's core. The door was formidable. Cutting through it would have required a star team to apply multiple plasma torches and nanotech thermobaric cord. Or, you know, a starship's PDS cannons could just blast the door into hot fragments. A moment later, after a single cannon chattered for less than a second, the weapons officer reported, "The front door is open, ma'am." "Outstanding. Safe all weapons," Chen ordered. "All weapons are saved, confirmed." Chen turned to me. "Sir, I can stand this ship on its tail for another 8 minutes. Then we either jump the hell out of here, or we crash and burn into the rock below when the booster fuel is exhausted." "That's a vivid picture," I acknowledged. "Colonel Frey, the front door is wide open. Your team is a go. Do not stop to browse at the Archive's gift shop." "We are a go," she acknowledged. "That gift shop stuff is overpriced anyway." In the launch tube, a former missile launch tube, Frey let out a breath, then I clicked an icon in her visor. A countdown began. 5, 4. "This will be interesting," she muttered to herself. Then whatever else she was going to say was cut off when the shell she was encased in raced up the tube into the chaos of the Archive chamber. The acceleration wasn't equivalent to the force with which a missile was slamming into combat. Those G-forces would have turned her body into a dense gel at the bottom of her armored boots. The moment her synthetic vision showed her head cleared the tube, she heard the shell being pelted with debris. Then the shell split apart, and she was arcing through the argon-filled chamber. Filled with argon normally, now the chamber contained that noble gas plus splattered pellets of plasma, dust that used to be part of Surprise's thin armor, remnants of the chamber's defenses, and a rapidly increasing hot cloud of expended rocket fuel. None of the chunky parts of the local atmosphere were visible in her helmet's vision. All she saw was what she needed to see. That included the two operators who had been launched from the same tube as her, whose protective shells had also been discarded, and who were flying in formation with her. Unlike the last time she flew on her own in combat, she wasn't strapped into a bulky experimental backpack. The Mark 32 suit she wore was specialized for independent flight and was intended for use only in situations where speed and maneuverability were prioritized over user protection. The stars referred to the Mark 38s as Iron Man suits, though the helmet sadly did not retract during key moments so an operator could deliver a clever remark. Despite numerous requests, the suit designers were not working to add that feature. Flying the suit was accomplished by either manually controlling the jets with fingertip and toe-tip controls, or the smarter method of eye-clicking in the visor on where she wanted to go and letting the suit computer handle the flying while she focused on situational awareness. For the raid at Pentavar, the front door had been programmed into her suit's flight system before Surprise jumped into the chamber. She soared through the crowded air, hearing unseen things ping off her helmet, which on the Mark 32 was equipped with so much additional ablative armor, it looked like the helmets American football players wore during preseason training. With her were 11 other operators, 4 of them in the lead. Another 6 operators were in reserve aboard Surprise in case of, well, unpleasant surprises. Skippy claimed that with the anti-personnel cannons out of action, the Archive was defenseless. Skippy said a lot of shit, and not all of it was true. The Pentavar Data Archive Defense AI recovered from the initial shock of seeing a client starship appear where such a thing was not possible! Not possible. No ship could jump through the solid rock above the chamber. That is why at first the AI had assumed its sensors were being spoofed, so instead of authorizing its weapons to fire and blast clear across the space to damage the other side of the chamber, the security AI ran a diagnostic on its sensor array. With budget cuts coming, someone might be looking at deactivating an AI that had never, ever actually been called upon to do anything. The results of the diagnostic were not yet available when other sensors reported the Therenian frigate was shooting, and before the AI could process the data, all of its defenses were unquestionably down. That would not look good in a performance review. Why was a Thuranan ship shooting at its patrons? Actually, that was a stupid question. Every client of the Maxalks hated their patrons with a passion and would take any opportunity to kill their superiors if they could get away with it. Trapped under solid rock, the frigate obviously was not concerned about getting away at all. Still, what was the point of... The AI received another shock. Emerging from missile tubes were not missiles, but small shells that split open to reveal humans. At that same moment, the AI received a message.
"Hey, asshole!"
chuckled a voice that was at the very top of the Maxalk's threat matrix. The Skippy. The AI didn't reply. It couldn't. Communication with Skippy was banned, for that advanced entity was known for corrupting trustworthy systems, such as defense network AIs. The security AI could have contacted the much more powerful strategic defense AI in orbit, except the communications hub had been destroyed. It had no contact with anyone outside of the chamber. It was alone. The director. In an emergency, its orders were to inform the director, whose office was... The director's office wasn't anymore. It didn't exist. The anti-personnel cannons, the communications hub, the personnel offices and quarters, all taken out in a second. The frigate's guns had known exactly where to hit the chamber, to isolate it and render the archive completely vulnerable. Of course, that ship's crew knew where to shoot. They were informed by Skippy. What did the humans want? They were inside the archive. 12 humans, in a type of mechanical-powered armor the AI did not recognize, were striding almost casually along a maintenance access corridor. The doors should have stopped them. The doors had properly slammed down and sealed, but the humans were doing something. Applying a handheld device to the side of the doorway where the mechanism was encased, the door slid upward without resistance. It had no director to provide guidance. It had no outside communications. It had no weapons. The interior of the archive was not provided with defenses on the assumption that, buried so deep under solid rock, and with the only access provided by an elevator that stopped in the center of the chamber, it was not possible for an enemy to get into the archive. The designers had also understood that ordnance and delicate archive substrate were not a good combination. The archive AI could not even trigger the archive's self-destruct system, since that system did not exist. No one had foreseen any need for the archive to destroy itself. There was no need to self-destruct the archive. The humans would destroy it. Wait. If the humans wanted to destroy the archive, they would already have done that. No. The humans intended to capture the archive, to steal it. Not the whole thing. Just the archive AI's all-important core. That could not be allowed to happen. It had to fight back, without weapons. Releasing maintenance bots could slow down the advancing humans, while the AI activated one other bot that could do something actually useful. Colonel Frey didn't bother shooting at the maintenance bot, since the thing was only the size of a toaster and had no weapons. The Star Team had strict orders while they were inside the archive. No shooting. Do not risk damaging the precious AI core. Their rifles were slung, and anyway were loaded only with low-velocity rounds that had basically rubber tips. Nothing that could penetrate armor, or bulkheads, or, most importantly, AI substrate. So she simply stomped on the thing and kicked it aside. The four-person team in the lead were reporting no serious opposition. Really no opposition at all. The schedule was 3 minutes, 40 seconds to gain access to the AI core. That time included hacking into and opening 3 armored doors. 1 full minute to remove the AI core and place it in a special container. In practice, that action took less than 25 seconds, but Frey had cautioned her operators to go slowly. Then 1 minute, 30 seconds to run along corridors, then fly back into an open docking bay. The Star Team schedule was a total of 6 minutes and 10 seconds, leaving an almost 2 minute safety margin before the booster motors exhausted their fuel. Another 107 seconds to the AI core, assuming the final 2 blaster doors cooperated with the master key provided by Skippy. Skippy. She didn't take her focus off the view from the lead operator's helmet camera. Are there any dangerous bots the Archive could throw at us? No. That thing you just stomped on was a harmless cleaning unit. The security AI must be desperate to throw that at you. There is nothing it can do that... She stutter-stepped, despite the powered armor suit assisting her balance. What?
Nothing, keep going.
Skippy, what?
Gotta go now, bye!
Joe, we, Skippy pretended to cough.
We might have a problem.
My blood felt ice cold. Not only was he giving me the telltale heh-heh, he also wasn't looking me in the eye. Oh, shit. Chen spoke before I could.
Weps.
Threat board is clear, Captain, the weapons officer reported. It's not anything we can shoot at, Joe, Skippy explained. This is an internal problem. Can the stars handle it?
Unfortunately, no. They can't get to the area. It is deep inside the support section of the archive facility.
What? I kept one eye on the clock that was counting to the booster fuel being exhausted. Is the problem?
The security AI has sent a bot to fry the archive AI's core.
What? How the f-
Why didn't you warn us this could happen? You said the archive doesn't have a self-destruct system.
It doesn't! This is not self-destructing. One AI is killing the other to prevent archive data from falling into enemy hands. The security AI here is doing the best job it can. It's making shit up as it goes.
Hey, isn't that what the military teaches you? Adapt, overcome, just make it work? The pirates do that all the time. They...
Frey called. General Bishop, do we have a situation? Colonel, proceed with the plan, I ordered. We're handling it, I added, which was not quite a lie. I was in the process of handling it. Sort of.
Skippy, explain exactly how the archive AI will get fried. There is a set of backup power cells that provide power in case both the geothermal power system and the fusion reactor are offline. The power cells are set up to provide a normal power flow to the AI core, but the security AI is sending a bot to sort of rewire the connections. Flip a switch, and all the power cells will surge at the same time. The power regulators will prevent the worst damage, but the surge will be enough to scramble the core. It will happen before the stars get to the core, and there is nothing I can do about it.
You can't hack into the bot?
No, duh, I told you why I can't do that. That's why the stars are busting in manually rather than me having a local bot deliver the core to the front door. The security AI has a hidden integrity subroutine that even it isn't aware of. If that subroutine detects an infiltration of the security system, or any of its ancillary devices like bots, the subroutine itself will trigger the power surge I just warned you about. If we can physically stop the bot without me hacking in, everything will be cool.
Is this bot a big armored thing?
No, you know the spider bots we have? It's like that, except you would probably call it a squirrel bot. A skinny thing with four legs and a prehensile tail. That means the tail can be used as sort of an extra limb that I know what prehensile means. It was a bad move for you monkeys to lose your tails during evolution. You, later, where is this squirrel thing and what is it doing?
Right now it is crawling along an access tube that is barely wide enough for it. Like real squirrels, this bot is almost boneless. It can fit just about anywhere.
I can show you a real-time image in a second when it emerges from the tube and begins to climb the main power cable.
There it is. It was a squirrel. It was gray. It had a tail.
My mouth dropped open.
Does that thing have fur?
It's not fur, he scoffed. They are nanofibers that can either help hold it in place or sort of scooch it along if it gets stuck in a tight space.
It does look like a squirrel, Chen said.
This is an example of convergent evolution, Skippy sighed. That shape works for rodents on many worlds, and it is excellent for multifunction maintenance bots. It combines the features of the spider bots and snake bots we use. We should consider-
Skippy, shut up. It's climbing the cable.
The thing was not only using its four legs to grasp the cable, the tail wrapped around to support it because the cable was thick and the surface was smooth. As it climbed, it spiraled around the cable in a way that was mesmerizing to watch.
How long is that cable?
73 meters.
Wow, look at that thing go.
I hate to say it, but part of me was rooting for the squirrel bot to reach the top. The task was apparently difficult. Its mechanical paws or whatever were slipping, and the tail danced as it clutched the surface as best it could. It was like watching a squirrel climb the greased pole of a bird feeder.
Climbing that cable is the only way to reach the power cells?
No, but a team of humans in powered armor are blocking the other route, so...
Right.
Joe, I estimated we'll reach the top and create a power surge 20 seconds before the stars can remove the AI core from its housing.
Ah, this sucks.
There is nothing I can...
What?
Give me a minute. We don't have a minute.
Just shut up, will ya?
Chen held up her hands in a should-we-be-doing-something gesture. I shook my head. There wasn't anything the ship could do to stop the squirrel bot. Nothing the star operators could do. It was Skippy's show. General-purpose light-duty maintenance unit 347 had never been so excited in its existence. Usually, the little robot worked for the engineering AI that kept the archive functioning and clean. That day, a day already unusual because the archive had been attacked for the first time any hegemony data archive had been attacked or even mildly threatened, that day, Unit 347 had been tasked directly by the security AI. It had an unusual mission, a vital mission. A mission that would destroy the archive AI's core, which to the bot's tiny brain sounded like something the security AI was not supposed to let happen, but nobody had asked Unit 347's opinion. The little bot was doing the best it could under difficult circumstances. The power cable's insulation layer was smooth, and the gripping pads on its feet were old and worn. Many of the nanofibers were no longer responding to commands. Those pods were scheduled to have been replaced years ago. Then the Civil War restricted availability of replacement parts. Then the victorious hegemony government decided that maintenance of auxiliary units and an archive that was under no conceivable threat was not a good use of scarce resources. So Unit 347 gamely struggled up the cable, frantically eager to prove its worth. And it was making progress. Already it was halfway up the cable, its visible light receptors watching its reflection in the mirrored pipe the cable ran through. The sides of the pipe was just a bit too far away for the bot to touch, so it wasn't able to brace itself, and the polished interior of the pipe would be even more difficult to grip. Two-thirds of the way. Three-quarters. The gripping pads on its feet and tail were overloading from the strain, individual nanofibers dropping offline. Progress was more and more difficult, but it could do it. It would do the job. Almost. Almost. It slipped. Fell down twice its length. Stopped. Held. Slowly, it continued upward, attempting to understand what had gone wrong. It reached the spot where it had fallen from and pulled itself up past the problem area by half its length. Then it slipped again. And again. It wasn't plunging downward. It was holding on with all its strength. It was just slowly, slowly, inexorably sliding down the cable. Frantic, desperate climbing did nothing. It could not maintain a secure grip. There was nothing it could do. The nanofibers of its gripping pads were not responding to commands. Unit 347 could not control them. It had failed. It clung to the cable, sliding slowly downward at a steady pace, accepting its fate. Life sucks. On the display, the squirrel bot had stopped struggling. It wasn't crashing to the bottom of the conduit pipe. It wasn't gathering speed as it slipped down the cable. It was just slowly, slowly descending, doing nothing, letting gravity take it down. Okay, crisis is over. Skippy gave me a thumbs up. Once again, Skippy the Magnificent has saved the day. What did you do? I just did a bit of what that bot was going to do. Run a surge down the cable. Enough electricity leaked out the insulation that its nanofiber gripper pads have lost cohesion. It's fine, it just can't climb anything. The squirrel bot's tail drooped. The thing was dejected. As it slid slowly down past one of the cameras Skippy was using to give us a view, the optical sensor on its sort of head turned toward the camera. It felt like it was looking at me. It had lost hope, accepted its fate. Without thinking, I sighed and raised a hand in salute. Chen repeated my gesture, and in a moment the entire bridge crew was saluting the little alien bot. Joe, Skippy sputtered. You are saluting that thing? We have all been there, little squirrel buddy, I said as it sank out of the camera's view. Ah, Skippy shrugged and raised his own tiny hand in salute. True dat. We're good then? Yes, we are. I need to contact Colonel Frey. The lead element of Frey's team rolled under the last blast door as it slowly ground upward. She crouched to follow, not waiting for the door to fully retract. There, right in front of them, in the center of a circular compartment surrounded by machinery, was the Archive AI Corps in its housing.
Katie?
Skippy interrupted her thoughts. There is a, slight change of plans. She wanted to snap at him for using her first name again on an open channel. The clock in the upper right corner of her visor told her there was no time for arguments.
Like what?
We had a minor problem, and I had to create a power surge to deal with it. The surge protectors of the core handled most of the overflow, but I had to shunt part of the power into an auxiliary component. You need to disconnect that component before you—
Team!
She barked as two operators were about to touch the core's housing. Halt! Everyone hold!
Skippy, go ahead.
Okay, so, you see that thing with the two glowing tubes?
Yes, what is it?
It's a dual-axis generator, model 195-290-1, but that's not important right now.
What does the thing do?
Well, it doesn't do anything, but if you don't decouple it from the core housing, it will fry the core when your team tries to remove it.
Show Carson, Igawa, and Rosen how to uncouple the thing.
Doing it. She stood watching, breathing to calm herself, while three operators followed instructions to basically unplug the generator from the core housing. This is not my fault, Skippy grumbled. I had to create a power surge to stop that squirrel, and the excess power went squirrel.
What squirrel?
It's a long story. Okay, okay. That's it. The generator is isolated. Grab the AI core and get out of there. Joe, the stars have the core, Skippy shouted. Launch the absorption field drones.
Chen didn't wait for an order from me. It was her ship. She gave the order to launch 14 drones from all around the ship.
The air inside the chamber was at that point only about 15% argon, with the remaining 85% a hot, high-pressure mix of expended booster fuel. The drones flew through the hot, dense fog and stuck to the walls of the chamber, anchored themselves, and switched into standby mode. The stars had the package and were egressing, which meant they were allowing their suit computers to control the powered arms and legs for a maximum speed, unopposed race back to the front door.
ETA 1 minute, 6 seconds.
Frey's voice was shaky as her suit bounced her around.
Outstanding.
I pumped a fist. On the display, a schematic showed the 12 star operators moving rapidly toward the door, the operator with the AI core in the middle of the formation.
Skippy, the party favor. Is it ready?
Jeez Louise, Joe, he hissed. He is properly called Sanjay, whose name means death. He isn't an it.
Okay, I'm terribly sorry.
Inwardly, I was rolling my eyes. Is Sanjay ready?
Almost.
He's reworking the third stanza of his missile corrido. The original version just wasn't punchy enough. Chen stared at me. All I could do was clench my fists.
Reworking his what now?
Missile corrido. You know, an epic song that sings the praises of heroic missiles. There is a very popular song for Todd the Destroyer, and for they each need a song now?
Of course they do. Your totally unfair military hierarchy doesn't award posthumous medals to weapons, so they need a way to memorialize their bravery, which reminds me their Union Negotiating Council wants to talk about later. Tell them we will talk later. As soon as the star team gets back, we are out of here. Sanjay needs to finish his freaking song and—
Ugh! You can't rush creativity, dum-dum.
Then you help him.
Me? I mean, you are the greatest songwriter of this generation, I said without gagging, so hooray for me. I can certainly understand why Sanjay would be intimidated by—
That is a great idea.
You and Sanjay, the death guy, have 41 seconds.
Gotta go now, bye.
Sanjay, whose name means death, finished his autobiographical missile corrido with 32 seconds to spare and launched gently from surprise to hover as far away as the chamber's length allowed. The stars flew into the open docking bay, and since we had time, we waited until all 12 operators were safely held in place by suspensor fields. That's when the 14 drones were switched on to blanket the chamber with a field that would absorb gamma radiation from our outboard jump, which was guaranteed to be loud and chaotic.
Absorption field is nominal, but it won't stay like that for long, Skippy warned.
Chen gave the order, and surprise jumped away, projecting our jump wormhole through the second micro wormhole that had arrived at the archive chamber in a box of boo-boo cakes. 10 seconds later, Sanjay lived up to his name by detonating a 20-kiloton tactical nuke.
The Maxalts would not understand how we did it, but they would hopefully assume our mission had been to destroy the Pentavar archive, especially since there clearly was no way we could have stolen the AI's core. I mean, that's just crazy talk. We had jumped away. There was only one problem. A ship with the mass of even a smallish, lightweight frigate could jump only a short distance through a micro-wormhole, since that tiny event horizon immediately collapsed when it was contacted by hellish energy of a full-size wormhole that could transport a starship. A short jump would not be a problem, except for a few of what Skippy had described as, complications. Jumping through a micro-wormhole, a jump that began deep in the gravity well of a planet, seriously dorked up Surprise's jump drive. We wouldn't be able to jump again until Skippy recalibrated the coils, a task that would take at least 4 minutes. 4 minutes during which our ship could not project a stealth field, because the vibrations of that field would interfere with the jump coils, or some technical bullshit Skippy tried to explain to me. Our frigate also had no defensive shields, and the paper-thin armor couldn't survive a direct hit by anything, all of which would have been a major problem, even if Pentavar's orbital strategic defense network hadn't been fully alerted and eager to shoot at anything, like us. We couldn't survive being exposed in low orbit for 4 minutes. So we cheated. Chapter 9. The Strategic Defense Network AI was ready, eager, desperate to shoot at something. Anything. A Theranan ship had penetrated its coverage area without being detected until that ship dropped its stealth field in a blatant shoot-me gesture. That wasn't just showing off. That was taunting. The most humiliating aspect of the incident was that the ship was a pathetic Theranan rust bucket, so there was no conceivable excuse for the network's sensors not detecting the intruder. That was bad enough. Then communication with the Archive's security AI cut off at almost the same moment the intruder jumped from orbit to wherever it went. The SD system could not pursue, since the AI's repeated requests for mobile sensor and guns platforms, otherwise known as starships, had been repeatedly denied by the hegemony. The SD network was at least certain the situation couldn't get any worse. Until seismic sensors detected an explosion far beneath the surface. The Archive had been destroyed by a low-yield fusion device. How the hell could that have happened? Everything and everyone who descended the elevator was thoroughly scanned. There was no... Oh, no. That box of snack food for the director. It had not been scanned. That was an issue to be dealt with in the future. At the present moment, the AI needed to find that Theranan frigate and do that without a warship available. It sent orders to the transport ship that was still in orbit. The order was refused. The transport ship was unarmed and a commercial vessel, not military. The SDAI stated it was requisitioning the ship under the Wartime Powers Emergency Authority of the Hegemony. And anyway, the enemy ship was merely a client species frigate, therefore no great risk to the transport. The transport ship's captain replied that sadly, her ship was unable to comply due to a recently discovered problem with the jump drive. And anyway, unless the SD system could explain how a Theranan frigate had destroyed an archive deep underground, that mystery frigate certainly was a serious threat. So, the SD network's AI was left to contemplate several questions, the most important of which was where the hell had that frigate gone? Earth Supremo. The commander of the hegemony military bowed just the correct amount as required by strict and ancient protocol when meeting the leader of the Maxalt's people. Clastine. Supreme Diktat Irvington did not bow at all. He barely nodded to acknowledge his underling. Irvington was irritated. He was busy still pulling the hegemony back together after the Civil War had finally ground to its bloody, inevitable conclusion. He was also irritated that security concerns prevented him from using an implant for communication during the meeting with the commander of his military machine. He had to resort to the crude voice box of his long-ago ancestors. Actual speech was so slow and primitive.
What is so urgent? Have you located the outsider?
In a way, Admiral Clastine answered, glancing at a chair opposite the Diktat's oversized desk. The desk was large not only for the effect it had on visitors to the office. The heavy furniture also contained weapons and a generator for a shield that could protect the person who was the personification of the Maxalt's people, the chosen one of the people who were destined to rule the galaxy.
In a way?
The diktat's tone was not only imperious, as should be expected of anyone holding that supreme office, irritated as was understandable for his busy schedule being interrupted. It also reflected his personal and undisguised disgust. Irvington had promoted Clestine as leader of the hegemony military not due to competence, but for the lack of it. The Admiral knew he was a dull bureaucrat, and if not for the recent civil war, he would have risen perhaps no higher than the rank of captain, entrusted with no more than a shipyard. Nothing with weapons, certainly not anything dangerous. Instead, by fortuitous timing, by many of his fellow officers having died during the conflict, and by Clestine's reputation of reliable, if dull-witted loyalty to the hegemony, he had been promoted far above his level of competence. When Irvington had begun maneuvering to the peak of the hegemony government, he had support from Admiral Clestine simply because they were both from the same colony world, and Clestine had lacked the imagination to consider there might be other reasons for personal loyalty. So, the diktat had Clestine's steadfast support and the burden of the Admiral being too dull to make decisions for himself.
"We know where the outsider was," the Admiral answered. "Recently." "And?" "Forgive me, diktat. I am here to brief you about the extremely urgent intelligence report I just received." "Why was an extremely urgent report not also sent directly to me?" Irvington demanded.
To his surprise, the Admiral did not flinch under the withering stare. The man had a reasonable, even thoughtful justification for withholding the report.
"Supremo, I am bringing the report to you myself, so you might later be able to deny any knowledge of the events, should you choose to do so."
Irvington had two thoughts. The first was his species equivalent of, "Oh shit, this dimwit might be smarter than I thought, and that could be a problem." The second thought that occurred nearly simultaneously was, "Oh shit, how bad is this intel that I need deniability?"
"Admiral," he used his underling's title, "your discretion is appreciated." "It is my honor to serve, Supremo. The issue is that one of our advanced weapons facilities, the research base at Garshal Ven 6, was attacked. I apologize for not reporting this to you sooner. We just learned of the event, as the Garshal Ven star system is not regularly visited by our ship. Two Elder weapons, of the type we designate as Starbreakers, were stolen."
He paused to take a breath, which would not have been necessary if they had been conversing via brain implant.
"By the outsider."
The leader of the hegemony understood instantly why his military commander had considered that deniability might be important. He too paused, but not to breathe. He was gathering his thoughts, which no implant could be trusted to assist with. He had two concerns. The first was, how could this be dangerous to me? The second was, how can I use this to my advantage? After those questions had been pondered and answered, he spoke with practiced calm.
"I have questions."
"Of course, Supremo."
"Only two weapons were taken?"
"That has been confirmed. There were only two Starbreakers at Garshal Ven 6 for research into their triggering systems. As you are aware..." The Admiral leaned forward, lowering his voice, though the diktat's office was entirely soundproof and the heavy door was closed.
"Our ability to initiate the use of such weapons is less than perfectly reliable."
Irvington was aware of that fact, a secret he had not known until he became the diktat. It was a dangerous secret known only to a few, even in the highest levels of hegemony society. No one had actually activated an elder weapon since the end of the original conflict between his people and the disgraceful Rindaloo. Records from that time indicated less than 9% of the deployed elder devices had accepted trigger commands. The rest had been active, yet done nothing. It was believed the Rindaloo had a similar problem with the exotic weapons they possessed. The hegemony had a total of only 288 elder weapons, so simple math indicated the diktat could rely on only 20 of the weapons being actually useful. That was a secret that had to be kept tightly controlled, for it was the threat of using those weapons against their clients that kept the hegemony coalition from fracturing. The Rindaloo must be aware their enemy's elder weapons were mostly useless, yet the spiders had not revealed their knowledge. Therefore, the Rindaloo must have the same problem, and were wisely keeping quiet about it for their own purposes.
The humans deployed 4 Elder weapons at the Sentinel activation site, Irvington requested confirmation. And all 4 of their devices were activated successfully?
That is the information we have from the surviving ships, Clestine said. Their count might not be completely accurate. The situation was rather chaotic.
That was a problem. It was believed the humans possessed far fewer Elder weapons than either of the 2 senior species, but apparently all weapons in the human arsenal were reliable. The question was how. The devices were ancient. Were they unreliable due to age, and the humans had discovered how to repair faulty components? Or did their captive Elder AI simply understand the correct activation procedure, while the Maxulks and Rindaloo were guessing? That was a problem. A problem to be dealt with later.
Admiral, there is no question the outsider was responsible for the theft?
There is no question. The evidence is irrefutable. The entity contacted the research station and demanded our people surrender the weapons under the terms of our recent mutual aid treaty with Moonraider. At the time, we believed Moonraider to be an Elder AI. The outsider's deception renders our agreement inoperative.
Yes, Supremo. The commander of Garshal Van 6 was not aware of our treaty, nor of the Moonraider's true nature. She did understand that no officer of the hegemony would ever be authorized to surrender control of our strategic forces. The station's internal defenses were activated against its own crew. There were no survivors. We are only aware of the events from remote sensor satellites in the area. The Star Carrier jumped away after 2 drones brought the 2 Starbreaker weapons aboard. The station's self-destruct system was then activated. We assume the outsider engaged the self-destruct on a delay.
Supremo, I of course offer my resignation and a sincere apology for this unforgivable failure.
The diktat did not hesitate.
Admiral, your resignation is refused.
A crisis was not an appropriate time to change leadership of the military, especially as Clestine had let slip that the man might be more intelligent than he appeared to be. A dim-witted military leader could be a burden to the diktat. A manageable burden. A smart commander of the hegemony armed forces could be dangerous. There was an old saying among the Maxulks, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Irvington would be keeping his military commander very close.
Supremo?
The Admiral's feigned surprise was not convincing.
This is a disaster for us. Never have we been so threatened on all sides. Our own weapons could be used against us.
Irvington breathed a bit easier. Clestine was no genius.
Admiral, this is not a disaster. It is an opportunity. Never have we had such an advantage.
Supremo? The man repeated, his surprise that time genuine.
I do not understand.
Clestine, you must learn to think strategically,
the diktat sniffed, having no actual desire for a military commander who could effectively think in terms of strategy.
Those weapons will not be used against us.
Oh, they...
Ah. Oh, you see now?
Perhaps I do.
Explain.
Clestine spoke slowly, choosing his words carefully.
The outsider will use the Starbreakers to achieve its own objectives, whatever they are. It will very likely use those horrific weapons against our enemies.
Yes, and
we will have no responsibility for any destruction caused by the outsider, for we are victims of its theft.
Correct.
Irvington allowed himself a smile, though inside he was conflicted. Had he revealed too much of his thinking to the Admiral? It was no matter, he decided. The man needed to understand the situation, or the hegemony military could not implement the diktat's plans.
Genuine theft of our strategic weapons is the only circumstance under which those weapons can be used against our enemies with no consequences to ourselves. The humans have announced their diaspora protocol, threatening destruction to us and the Rindaloo if Earth is ever attacked by Elder weapons. Such a policy is a childish temper tantrum by a young species unworthy to wield great power.
Childish, Clestine agreed. But effective. It forces us and our enemies to police each other's actions. Supremo, while this
Diaspora protocol is indeed an emotional overreaction by an infant species. It does not relieve one concern I had. Irvington seemed genuinely surprised that his military commander had an independent thought. What is that? Before, I feared the Rindaloo would attack Earth with elder weapons and blame us in what we call a false flag operation. I am familiar with the term, the diktat bristled, exposing his fangs. Please forgive my impertinence. The issue, which I am sure you recognized before I did, is that the new human policy protects us from being falsely accused, as there is now no incentive for the Rindaloo to blame us for an attack they committed. I did recognize that aspect of the protocol. That is why I allowed the human diplomats to live after they delivered their insulting declaration. Admiral, I must consider how best to seize this advantage, which will undoubtedly be a brief window of opportunity for us. Our next action must be to alert the Rindaloo and the humans of the theft. Of course, Supremo, I have courier ships standing by to jump. The ships each have a full set of sensor data from the incident at Garshal Ven 6. They only await your staff composing an official communique. An official message will be provided. However, we should not be hasty about providing access to our sensor data. We should not? The Admiral repeated the diktat's statement, though clearly without understanding the intent. Clestine, Irvington explained patiently. Surely you can see that it would be foolish for us to provide full access to raw, censored data. Such information could allow the humans a glimpse into our security protocols and to perceive with great accuracy the capability of our sensors. Ah, forgive me, Supremo. The sensor data has been scrubbed both to conceal sensitive aspects of the Garshal Ven 6 facility and any information about the outsider that might be useful to the humans. Does the data reveal anything about the outsider that might be useful to us? No. Unfortunately, at this time, we have no idea how the outsider was able to thoroughly compromise the base security. I trust you have ordered increased security measures at all isolated facilities that possess elder weapons? Those courier ships departed within moments after I received the news. Supremo, there are only two other research facilities that are currently working with elder weapons, and they each have only one device. My orders are that if any unauthorized ship approaches the station, the AI there is to initiate an immediate self-destruct. A sensible precaution. Tell me, Clestine, do we know of similar research facilities the Rindaloo might operate? The Admiral was surprised by the question. He was careful not to reveal his inner thoughts. We know of four such facilities. The Rindaloo are assumed to have the same issue of unreliable initiation procedures of elder weapons. The diktat mused. It would be unfortunate if the outsider learned the location of those enemy research stations and obtained additional weapons. That would be unfortunate, Clestine agreed, knowing he had been dismissed. With a bow, he backed away, hearing the heavy door slide open behind him. When Irvington was again alone in his office, he leaned his chair back and rested his feet on the desk, not because that position was more comfortable, but because it reminded him that the desk and the power associated with it was his. At the moment, Admiral Clestine had contacted him to request an emergency meeting. Irvington had been concerned, seriously concerned, that the office of Diktat might not remain under his control for much longer. His political enemies had been emboldened by the shocking news that the Moon Raider entity was actually an ancient being from beyond the galaxy. Diktat, Irvington, his enemies whispered, had taken a foolish risk by joining forces with the Moon Raider. It had been a risk, he knew that. What he knew, that his enemies stupidly could not see, was that the true risk had been in not assisting the Moon Raider, whatever the identity of that mysterious entity. If the hegemony continued on its current path, a gradually creeping loss of power and eventual irrelevance was inevitable. The only way for the Maxalt's people to fulfill their destiny of leading the peoples of the galaxy to a glorious future was to change course. If the outsider was the enemy of the Rindaloo and humans, then the outsider was acting for the benefit of the hegemony, whether it intended to or not. If the outsider's actions ultimately allowed an invasion from beyond the galaxy, that was a risk Irvington was willing to take. Taking that risk would be his decision. His political enemies would run for cover after the outsider used stolen weapons to strike the Rindaloo, the humans, or both. In fact, the strategic situation could become so favorable to the hegemony that his rivals might wonder behind his back whether the Diktat had arranged for the outsider to steal the Starbreakers. Let them speculate. Let the rumors fly. Fear would keep his enemies from acting against him.
Ma'am, the supply officer of the Hegemony 28th Fleet's flag battleship pinged the captain, who was watching four missiles being unloaded from a dropship. A fleet-wide alert had been received, ordering all units capable of flight to bring their ships up to maximum readiness. The 28th Fleet was scheduled to depart the next day, despite having just returned from a patrol that had been extended twice. The ships were worn out, the crews were exhausted, and the only thing to do was suck it up and get the job done. Whatever the job was.
Part of this shipment is odd. I didn't request these.
He highlighted a container with his optic implant and also made the crude gesture of pointing to it.
I know, the captain replied, but didn't bother to look in his direction. She didn't need to. The ship fed any images she wanted to her own optic implant.
I personally added that box to the manifest at the request of Admiral DeMarco.
Yes, ma'am. May I inquire as to why we need a crate with 84 of these?
The digital label read a long Hegemony Fleet item number with the description, Beverage Maker, Hot Koth, for Theranan use only.
If we get the opportunity, we will be distributing them free of charge at any Theranan outposts we visit. We will be generous with our gifts, is that clear?
Yes, ma'am.
So, his shoulders slumped before he could override his body language.
This is another Hearts and Minds initiative?
To her reply, she added a touch of irritation, and no small measure of amusement.
All I know is Admiral Toveth stated that if he had a box of those beverage makers at Tunguskat, he would not have failed an important mission and been demoted to a reserve posting. Admiral DeMarco will not be making the same mistake.
3 days after the surprise jumped out of the archive chamber, the Pentavar SD network was forced to take its weapons off high alert. The units could not be maintained at full power for longer without serious damage. The AI, of course, knew the planet would be defenseless for a short time, but that didn't matter. The archive had been destroyed, the mystery Theranan frigate had disappeared, the damage was done. The transport ship had departed, promising to report the failure of the Pentavar security system, making that promise with a bit too much enthusiasm, to be honest. The SD network AI expected to be examined, replaced, and discarded. It wasn't fair, but that was its fate. Life sucks. 79 hours after Surprise jumped out of the archive chamber, the battleships Ohio, Normandy, and Fujian prepared to jump in formation. A tight triangle formation that would be a challenge to their navigators, though the jumps would cover a distance of less than 7 light minutes. A bit less than the distance of Earth to the Sun. Still, many millions of kilometers. The task force commander could not be certain that Surprise had successfully jumped out of the underground chamber, and there was no way to contact that ship. They did know that the archive chamber had been vaporized by a tactical nuke, and they knew a gamma ray burst, from where the frigate emerged back into normal space, had not been detected. The battleships knew roughly where to look. The frigate could not have jumped far. Space around the planet was clear. No gamma radiation other than the normal background. The transport ship had departed orbit and flown far from the planet before it jumped. The burst from that ship was completely normal. 3, 2, 1. Exactly on schedule, the three battleships emerged 56,000 kilometers above Pentavar, recovered the jump distortion, and waited with their defensive shields inactive. There. A stealth drone was approaching the trio of battle wagons at a leisurely pace, on course to pass through the center of the formation. Surprise had dropped off that drone 3 days prior, letting it coast inward toward the planet so it would be at a precise location at a precise time. 5, 4. The drone dropped its stealth and the containment vessel inside it split open, exposing one end of a micro wormhole. 3, 2, 1. Surprise emerged in the center of the triangular formation, and the armor plating of the three battleships absorbed a chaotic burst of gamma radiation.
A microsecond after that, the big battle wagons extended their shields to protect the vulnerable frigate, and their guns started shooting, taking out the dangerous X-ray laser satellites of the SD network first. "Frey," I called from the bridge, breathing deeply through my nose to calm my rebellious stomach. "Is your team okay down there?" "We are." She paused, and I could hear her swallow hard. Her own stomach must have also suffered from the unusual jump. "All just fine, sir. The AI core is secure. Is everything on schedule?" We emerged exactly where and when Skippy predicted. She sighed. "He's going to be extra insufferable, isn't he?"
"You know it," Skippy crowed. "Who the man? I'm the man."
"That's great, Skippy. Focus on fixing the jump drive so we can get out of here, please."
"Sir?"
Frey asked. "What's this about a squirrel?" 4.5 minutes after Surprise reappeared, the frigate completed recalibration of its drive coils and jumped away. The battleships followed. The SD network, never having managed to fire a single shot, was left with one question. What the fuck just happened?
"Joe!" Skippy appeared in my cabin, which was also my office aboard the frigate. In spite of the incredible difficulties I had to overcome, that was pretty much a textbook operation. His expression was extra smug. "No, it was not. We got lucky that the director was jonesing for snack cakes, and you didn't account for the squirrel bot in your planning."
"We planned the op to coincide with the transport ship being in orbit and ready to unload. That is why we chose the Pentavar archive."
"Yes, but any time meat sacks are involved in a delivery, there is always going to be some kind of contraband. This time, it happened to be boo-boo cakes."
"Okay, I wish you had told me you were counting on smuggling the micro-wormhole containment vessels in a box of alien snack cakes. What about the squirrel? That was not in your textbook."
"It's in your textbook, Joe. The Merry Band of Pirates."
"No, it was not. Everything you do, the pirates have to improvise, like dealing with an unexpected squirrel bot."
"That's a fair point." "Okay, that was an outstanding job of improvising, Skippy."
"That's what I was saying before you interrupted me."
"Well, you should be happy. We got to use your idea."
"Yeah, we did."
I had waited to raid a Maxalt's security data archive back before we deployed Elder weapons against what we thought was Moonraider. Raid an archive to learn exactly what the kiddies and Moonraider were planning. Back then, I decided against a raid, since compromising an archive would surely cause Moonraider to change its plans, and we would have gained nothing. The best part is the kiddies have no idea we didn't just destroy their archive.
"That's true, but I don't know for how much longer it will remain a secret."
"What do you mean? They have no information from inside the archive chamber, and we nuked the place."
"At first, the Maxalts will detect only the nuke. Eventually, they will drill down the collapsed elevator shaft into the cavern that was the archive chamber, and they will find evidence of gamma radiation. The absorption field blocked gamma rays from leaving the chamber, but everything inside was bathed in radiation for our outbound jump. Their AIs are smart. They will understand the signature of the gamma rays in the chamber matched the signature of Surprise emerging between the battleships. The rotten kitties are not stupid. They will understand that somehow a Thoranan frigate jumped into the archive from orbit and then jumped out."
"Okay, sure, but they won't know how it happened."
"Not for now. Like I said, they are not stupid. They could start protecting their critical underground facilities with disruption and dampening fields so we can't jump in or out."
"Shit.
That's not something we have to worry about right now."
"And they won't know we jumped forward in time."
They should eventually be able to understand we did that, if not how."
"Well, that doesn't sound..."
"I just told you, when their AIs examine the gamma rays of our jump out of the archive chamber, they will realize the two jump signatures more than 3 days apart are identical. The only logical conclusion is those two gamma radiation events are from the same jump 3 days apart."
"Shit.
That could create big trouble for us. We won't be able to fool our enemies in the future."
"That is true, Joe. We," he snorted, "will lose the advantage of..."
He convulsed with laughter.
"Surprise!"
"You," I had to laugh, "are hilarious.
Seriously, we can't use this ship again."
"Yeah, I know."
Our modifications to that frigate had made it into a single-purpose asset,
and the Navy was likely to decide the expense of rebuilding a small, old, unique ship wasn't worth the expense. What I worry about is our enemies getting the technology to perform time-delayed jumps.
Dude, he stared at me. As if.
You just said the Maxalts will eventually discover what we did.
Knowing that it happened is very different from understanding how it happened. Hell, for years even I didn't understand what happened with your jump away from Detroit. Besides, no way can a jump like that be made to work without the incredible awesomeness of me.
Our DeLorean dropship performed the first time-delayed jump away from Detroit without you.
I wasn't aboard that dropship, but I did program its navigation computer.
That's true.
That first time was a bit of luck. I knew you monkeys were clueless, so I programmed the DeLorean's navigation system to be extremely flexible about interpreting my instructions based on whatever conditions it encountered during the jump. That nav computer was grossly oversized for a dropship, if you remember, and still it was barely able to handle the calculations. Trust me, even if the Maxalts or Rindaloo puzzle through the data from Pentavar and understand we used a jump to travel forward in time, no way will they be able to replicate the technology. That is a Skippy exclusive, and you should be honored that I am sharing it with you.
I am so honored every day you are with us, I muttered, digging a fingernail into my palm so I didn't laugh or gag or roll my eyes.
Well, he sniffed, you should be. Bah, anyway, I was kind of screwing with you. The kiddies are unlikely to understand that a ship jumped into and out of the archive chamber.
I know you think everyone else in the galaxy is stupid, but Sanjay's warhead was specifically prepared to generate gamma rays in a way that has very effectively scrambled all traces of the radiation from our outbound jump.
Okay, that is a good thing. Why didn't you tell me you were doing that before the op?
You just had me worried sick, you ass. Joe, you monkeys, you especially, take me for granted way too often.
I am the person who appreciates you the most. Yes, and it's not enough, he pouted. You have by far the best view of just how extreme my awesomeness is, and still, when I do something that expands the definition of magnificence, you're all like, whatevs. I do not, my mouth blurted out before my brain could catch up.
You have one job, Bishop, I reminded myself. Do not screw it up.
Okay, yes, technically I have two jobs. The second job is dreaming up wacky new ideas for Skippy to implement. That secondary job is only possible when I perform my primary job properly, being Skippy's friend. There was no reason for him to help humanity other than that he liked us. Like some of us. A handful, really. My job one was to be his friend, keep him entertained, and most important, make him feel appreciated, as much as any filthy monkey ever could.
You know what? You are absolutely correct about that, and I am very, very sorry.
Hmph! He sniffed.
You have to understand, to us, even your everyday awesomenesses are beyond our ability to comprehend. So when you do yet another incredible thing, it's like trying to stuff 10 kilos into a 5-kilo bag. Our brains are full, you know?
So you say. Let me ask this. Instead of telling me ahead of time that you had a plan to prevent the kiddies from knowing a ship was in their archive chamber, you waited until I was worried sick about our plan being exposed and then told me you had already taken care of it.
Basically, yes. Is this, he sighed, another thing that will get me into trouble?
Not this time. I'm sorry you felt a dramatic gesture was necessary, and you're right, it was necessary. A team member who finds a problem and fixes it is valuable. The most valuable team member is one who anticipates a problem and prevents it from happening. That's you.
Well, thank you. Hey, what about a team member who fixes a problem he caused only to create an even bigger problem?
Oh, well, that person is clearly management material. I tapped the two stars on my uniform collar.
Can we change the subject, please? What have you gotten from the Archive AI Corps?
Nothing yet, numbskull. I have been busy performing a miraculous jump from deep beneath the surface of a planet, then fixing that drive so we can jump again. By the way, the Rio Grande has cleared us to dock. Shouldn't you be on the bridge?
I should be anywhere other than on the bridge. Surprise is Chen's ship. I would just get in the way and distract the crew.
When can you start working on the Archive AI?
I started working on it a moment ago when you whined about me not having the job done yet, you big jerk.
There is an enormous volume of data in there, and it is all protected by the most secure encryption scheme the Maxalts possess. To give an example, even for my ginormous brain power, to decrypt a single word would take approximately 8 days.
8 magical skippy days or 8 slow monkey days?
Monkey days.
Whoa. Why so? With my mouth still open, I realized completing my thought would insult him. That would drag the conversation on forever while I soothed his bruised ego. Fortunately, though I am a filthy monkey, I had learned to think fast.
So complicated an encryption scheme for an archive that was supposed to be inaccessible.
Inaccessible to other species, but not to potentially hostile elements within Maxalt's society. Those in power do not want their rivals learning secrets that could be used against them, for example.
I gotta say 8 days per word is not what I was hoping for.
Listen, dum-dum, that is 8 days to get the first word. It gets easier after that, and easier as I decrypt more and more of the database. It's not a database, but you know what I mean.
Okay, so how long to find any messages exchanged between the Hegemony and Moonraider?
I won't know that until I find it. There isn't a handy-dandy index listing the juiciest top-secret files.
Uh-huh. Well, give me a ballpark estimate, please.
Fine. All I really have to do is read through a sample of data, about 16%, to get a clue about the archive's architecture, how it's organized, that sort of thing. From there, it should be easy.
How long will that take to hit that 16% mark?
Oh, about 4 billion years past the heat death of the universe. The archive stores a mind-boggling amount of data.
What the why did we even bother to hit that archive?
Oh my, you are such an irrepressible asshole. We can't wait that long, you little Joey.
He shook his head.
I'm sure you are working up to a truly entertaining rant, but I said it would take 8 days to decrypt a single word.
Why does that...
Oh, it won't take 8 days?
Nope.
How?
What am I all about, Joe? Being an asshole? That's who I am, not what I do.
I am all about cheating. All I had to do was ping the archive AI and request the decryption key.
It just gave you the freaking key?
Of course it did, after I provided what the AI thinks are the proper credentials.
Oh, well, good job. It's me, so duh.
Why did you get me all spun up about how long it would take?
He blinked.
I need a reason to screw with you?
No, you don't.
Thanks.
For reals, how long to retrieve the message traffic between the kiddies and the outsider?
Those messages are already on your tablet. Once the proper credentials are provided, the archive AI is very helpful. It was designed to be, you know.
Great. I reached for my tablet.
Wait! The archive requests that you not touch the information with your filthy fingers. Please wear gloves. Also, no talking, eating, drinking, or chewing gum while in the archive.
I wiped my hands on my shirt. I will try to be a good, quiet monkey.
Chapter 10.
Skippy, I looked up from the dry translated text of the messages I was reading. Were all communications between the outsider and the Maxalts in a, you know, digital text format?
What else did you expect?
Any...
I can assure you the outsider did not communicate in the form of a sock puppet show.
I meant, were there any voice comms, you ass?
Why do you care?
It would be interesting to hear our enemy. Just its voice, its tone, could reveal information.
Is this a meat sack thing?
It is. I would feel different about the outsider if it has a squeaky voice.
Oh yes, Joe, its voice sounds like a chipmunk breathing helium, he said with an eye roll.
Although, that would be funny, he chuckled.
It would.
How much would it change Star Wars if Darth Vader had a squeaky voice? Skippy snorted.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
He said it like a chipmunk. Yeah, that is not, I laughed, quite as intimidating.
You have no idea what the outsider sounds like?
It is made of energy, numbskull. It doesn't have a voice.
No, but it could replicate a voice the way you do. The type of voice it chooses could tell us something useful.
What does my voice tell you?
Well,
I mean, your deep, commanding voice clearly indicates that you are a take-charge alpha AI.
Oh, good. That's what I was going for.
You nailed it. I dug a fingernail deep into my palm so I didn't laugh or roll my eyes.
Do you have any other stupid questions?
No, I'll finish reading these messages again. There's not much here. The kiddies didn't drive a hard bargain. They certainly gave the impression they are desperate.
Yeah, and that's not good for us.
I focused on the message traffic, muttering to myself, trying to find hidden meaning in the dry words. Maybe someone who specialized in Maxalt's psychology should review the messages, find something I missed. Or maybe there wasn't any hidden subtext. The messages were just two homicidal assholes chatting about joining forces to make a serial killer dream team. And I had read those messages. My job sucks.
Sir? Chen stuck her head into my tiny cubbyhole of a cabin, holding up a cup of coffee. You look like you could use a break.
Ah, I twisted in my chair, loosening my stiff back. Yeah. Please, come in. I moved my duffel bag off the only chair in the cabin. I was sitting on the bunk. Surprise had been modified for human use after we took it from the Theranon, but the cabins were still tiny. Being aboard the frigate reminded me of my time aboard the original Flying Dutchman, and not in a good way. Sit down, Colonel. She gave me the coffee before taking the seat.
You could transfer to the Constellation or the Rio Grande, sir. They both have flag officer quarters. Are you eager to get me off your ship, Chen?
I asked with a wink.
I am eager to get myself off this ship, she admitted with a grimace. Surprise is just dead ballast.